Hello everyone and welcome to the MMA Torchcast for Friday, June 1st, 2007. This is the sixth edition of the MMA Torchcast. Joining me this week once again is Jerry Cataline. Jerry, how's it going?
It's going well, man. It's going well.
All right. And we have got a lot of things to talk about today. Let's start off with, we had a question in the forums from Joe88 in the podcast thread this week. He says he'd like to discuss Brock Lesnar and his MMA future. How many tomato cans are they going to put in front of him before he faces some decent heavyweights? How long do you think he'll be with K1 before maybe going to the UFC if he is good enough? And what's with this event he's fighting it in this Saturday? Why are they holding it at LA Coliseum? And why are they having such a hard time getting fighters cleared for the show? Lots of questions and lots of answers. So let's start off with Lesnar and his future. How many cans they're going to throw in front of him? You could argue that Hongman Choi is not really a can.
No, that was the first thing I was going to say. I'm not sure that I would characterize this guy as an absolute can. I mean, in the grand scheme of things, especially with the way we've seen things break out on the main stage, that there are a lot of fighters who are good fighters that you just have not heard of. Choi is a legitimate fighter. Having said that, obviously it's Lesnar's name that's carrying the card here, but I wouldn't characterize Choi as a can.
Yeah. Now, of course, now we found out that Choi did not get cleared, so he actually won't be fighting Hongman Choi. He'll be fighting Min-Soo Kim, I believe the guy's name is. And Min-Soo Kim is a guy who I believe has yet to pick up a win in mixed martial arts. It's hard to, you know, criticize the choice of opponent when you get, like a week to plug in kind of, I'm wrong here. He does have a couple of wins. He's 2-5.
Yeah, I think it'll change the fight a little bit for Lesnar, who I suspect for his debut really wanted to have an idea of what his opponent brought to the table so that he doesn't go out there and, get owned. But this kind of ties into some of Joey's other questions. I mean, if you go to the Elite XC website, they're still advertising Choi as Lesnar's opponent.
Yeah, they are. They are.
Which I think kind of ties into why they're having so much trouble having the fighters cleared. If you can't keep your website updated the day before the fight with who the main card opponent is going to be, it suggests that you're going to have some issues with some of the other technical aspects of production and promotion.
Yeah, I think the big problem with this is FEG, who is the promoter for K1. They're a Japanese company, and the way they do business, the way they promote events in Japan, Japan. It's just very different from the way they do it here. Everything is actually regulated here, whereas in Japan, you can throw together an MMA event, a promoter can, and just throw whoever you want on there.
Thus you get the free fight
and the
overwhelming weight classes and whatnot. Yep.
Yeah, exactly. Now as far as Lesnar himself, he's fighting Min-Soo Kim. Min-Soo Kim, he's 2-5. Picked up wins over Sean O'Hare and Yoshihisa Yamamoto, both in K1. Mm-hmm. So he's a guy, they got him at the last minute. Lesnar will probably end up winning this fight. I would imagine, anyway. I mean,
You would think.
Yeah. I mean, Lesnar, he's a guy that gets criticized by people who don't know because he was a professional wrestler, but he was an All-American national champion, NCAA, wrestler. So he's got the creds, and as far as wrestling goes, anyway, he's trained with Miletic. He's in there training with Greg Nelson right now. And Lesnar, has the possibility of being a real deal at heavyweight.
Yeah, I mean, you can look at him and you certainly think he's got the tools. I mean, he's certainly the right age, certainly comes from the right background, certainly in the right camp. I mean, everything is there, and you have to wonder how far he'll progress. Plus, he kind of carries that name recognition around with him that...
Absolutely.
That, to take the next step onto the big stage, I think if he throws a few wins together, it's not outlandish to think he might get spirited away into the UFC/Pride organizations.
Yeah, I agree.
And this is in contrast to, I think we brought up Kurt Angle's name about making the jump last week, which I think we both agreed would be a potential disaster.
Yeah.
Lesnar, I think, brings different attributes to the table, not the least of which is he's younger.
Yep.
And at this point in his career, probably much more durable.
Yeah, absolutely. He's a lot more healthy than Angle is.
Exactly.
You know, Angle's got the history of neck problems, and it's the last thing you want to have with a UFC fighter or an MMA fighter. Now, there was the concern brought up by a few people about Lesnar making the 265 weight limit in the UFC. I don't see that as being an issue. You know, he was a legit 300 pounder when he was a professional wrestler, but you know, you just don't need that kind of bulk when you're in MMA. And I believe he's slimmed down a bit. I've seen him since then. And he's slimmed down. You know, I think he probably walks around, you know, maybe a little bit over 265, but not much.
Right. Yeah, I mean, I think he's listed at only, 6'2 or 6'3. So if he loses some of the monster bulk, obviously he can probably come in under 265. It's not like he's 6'6 or 6'8 and has a frame to maintain.
Yeah. I mean, you figure a guy like Tim Sylvia. If Tim Sylvia can get down to 265, I don't think it'd be an issue for Lesnar.
Exactly. This shouldn't be an issue for Lesnar, especially with a background of, wrestling all through his, essentially, career.
Yeah. Yeah, and as far as him, getting into the UFC, you know, if he makes short work of Minsoo Kim and looks impressive and shows some charisma out there, just an eventuality for him to wind up in the UFC. I mean, he's got he's got the name recognition, and he could definitely put some butts in the seats.
Oh, I agree. I think it'd take more than one big win. I think, a couple dominating wins where he looks like a monster.
Yeah.
And I think, the next logical step would be probably a bump to the WEC.
Yeah.
Where he jumps up onto the big stage.
Yeah, although I don't know if the WEC actually has heavyweights.
I had read that they were kind of branching into that to kind of bolster the UFC Pride heavyweight division. I thought they were going to have some heavyweight prelim fights. I can't remember where I read that, but I thought I read that somewhere. He'd be a logical guy to start it. I mean, as opposed to tossing him to the Sharks right away.
That's for sure. I mean, it will probably be a smart move to and I'm problems here. Probably a smart move to throw him into the WEC if they're actually going to start a heavyweight division. You know, he's a guy that could headline for them and get the WEC some eyes, you know?
Right. I can't remember. I can't give you a credible source for that, as I just don't recall where I saw it, but I know I saw it somewhere recently.
Yeah. Well, it sure makes sense. And as far as the event itself, the K1 / Elite XC event, is co-promoted, obviously, by K1 and Elite XC. The Elite XC is the promotion that's showing on Showtime, and it'll be, we were talking about this earlier, it'll be shown in three different parts, actually. you'll get the undercard or the prelims streamed on ProElite.com, like they did with the last Elite XC show. Then you'll get a few fights on Showtime. Then after that, you'll go to pay-per-view to watch the rest of the show. What's your thoughts on the layout of this there, Jerry?
I think it's a mess. I think it's just an absolute mess. And again, this has got to be, a little bit of experience in promoting in this country with how this broke down. But for the consumer, I think that, and I can only speak for myself, but usually when a Saturday night pay-per-view is a group event, and you all gather around the computer for the prelims, and then if you don't have Showtime, buy Showtime for the event.
Yep.
And then buy the pay-per-view is not only, first it's expensive.
Yep.
Secondarily, you have to be able to change channels and move around and change where you are and really pay a lot of attention to the production as opposed to actually the fighting.
Yeah.
So perhaps this is perhaps this is just growing pains, but obviously this is something they have to improve on if they're going to continue to promote. And one other thing I would point out is, for example, I have to work Saturday night. I work overnight. I'm not going to be able to watch the event live anyway. So that means that somehow, if I want to watch this event at all, I have to pick it up on Pro Elite later and do some multiple technical right. issues with my DVR to have it switching around and multiple programming. And, you know, I mean, is it impossible? No. Is it difficult? No. But it's a hassle.
Yeah, and it,
you
the question is...
free for your consumers.
Yeah, the question is how many people are actually going to take the time to do it and figure it out, and
right.
then, and how many people are going to mess it up and then get mad that they don't see the whole thing?
Right, especially if you blow the last part where you're paying for the pay-per-view.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
you record something else or you mess it up. And again, I'm probably aging myself here and dating myself here, but not outside the realm of possibility for most folks.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, another thing we didn't mention, it's coming on the heels of probably the biggest UFC event ever. You know,
yeah.
as far as mainstream coverage, as buys probably will indicate, you know, people just dropped $40-$50 last week. If you watched it in HD, $50.
$50.
And you know, are they going to be as willing to drop $40 on an event that's been kind of in limbo the last little while? You know, they've had trouble clearing fighters. They've had trouble. You know, even getting their financial records to the athletic commission to have the event go off, you know, who's going to be confident enough to drop that kind of cash
right.
On another show?
No, this will be a good first effort. I mean, they have the names on the card to make it intriguing.
Yep.
But it's going to be something they have to grow on.
Yeah.
Something
they have
to grow
sure.
on. Because I think their next event... at least for Elite XC combining with Strikeforce, I think is coming up in only like 3 weeks.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's Shamrock Baroni.
Yep.
Which
is actually looking like a pretty solid show.
Yeah. I mean, you got Joey yeah. Villasenor on that show.
Sure.
You got Murilo Rua, which is Shogun's
mm-hmm.
little brother.
Mm-hmm.
Kun Lee's fighting. Wintello's fighting. I think you got a lot of guys who are fun fighters to watch.
Yeah, for sure.
At the very least.
Yeah.
Anyway, getting back to this one, though, I think... you know, Jake Shields is on this card,
yep.
and he's an up-and-comer.
Mm-hmm.
You know, looks like a good card. If
yeah, I believe Shields is on the Showtime portion of the event.
He's on the undercard Showtime, the
yeah.
mid-card, I guess we should say.
The mid-card, right,
mid-card.
Exactly.
Show.
Yeah.
And I don't think we've even touched on Gracie Sakuraba.
Yeah, Gracie Sakuraba is another big one. I was actually surprised that they got Sakuraba cleared.
Oh, that's amazing.
If you're not familiar with the situation, those that are listening, Sakuraba last year was having, he passed out during a training session, and they found that he was having problems with blood circulation in his brain, which is, you know, it's pretty serious stuff. I'm sure Jerry can confirm as the doctor
yeah,
of the show.
Yeah, that's not good for you. No. That's not good for you.
Yeah, so, you know, he didn't fight for a while. I believe he's been, I think he has fought since then. Maybe he's not. I might be mistaken.
I don't think anyone has cleared him to fight since then.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think he did fight last year, but not after the brain circulation thing.
I think that's how it went down.
Yeah. So, so he did get cleared. He will be fighting Hoist Gracie in a rematch of what was one of the most seminal fights in the history of mixed martial arts, which actually, a plug for an upcoming column, Mike Jarslick, I know, is planning on going through a minute-by-minute recap of that fight and why it was such an important fight in mixed martial arts. So we won't go
column.
Too much into that. With that.
That's going to be a long column.
Yeah, no kidding. It's a six-round fight, which when it all came down to, about 90 minutes or so.
Yeah, 90 minutes.
Yeah, so I'm looking forward to seeing that from Mike, because Mike knows the stuff as far as all that goes.
Let me ask you a quick question on that point.
Yeah.
Are you interested in seeing Mike's column instead of this fight?
You know...
I have a feeling this fight's just going to be kind of a letdown. I just think there's too much history and hype in their first fight.
Yeah. I don't know how it could live up to. I don't know how it could live up to the expectations.
They're older. They're more war torn. They're more weathered.
Yeah.
I can't imagine how they got Sakuraba cleared. I mean,
I
was the licensing doc with my name on the line for the athletic commission, and Sakuraba's got a history of multiple serious head injuries, multiple concussions, and passed out during training, probably because he was enough blood to his brain. I don't see how you could possibly clear this guy.
I mean, the only thing I can think of is they looked at who he was fighting, because Gracie obviously is not a big striker. You know, he's not going to be punching him in the head. But at the same time, you know, it's a fight. Who knows what's going to happen?
At the same time, that's not to say Gracie won't punch him in the head.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and it's not even the point. It's not so much that Sakuraba was getting punched in the head during his workout. He was working out.
Yeah, yeah, you're right.
Which means that his heart was pumping to keep up with the energy needs of his muscles, and the brain got left out. And the brain is a very greedy organ, and it likes its blood supply. And if it doesn't get it, your brain will put you horizontal. That's just the way the body works. So Sakuraba is going to be working in there. I mean, even if he's not getting hit in the face, he's going to be working. I hate to say it, this has almost got like a car wreck act, you know, a car wreck appeal to it.
Doesn't it?
And I mean, I don't have the historical chops of most folks, but I really don't want to watch the first fight on pay per view. A fighter gets paralyzed or dies. You know, I don't want to see them doing CPR on Sakuraba in the middle of the ring because he had episodes. Now that's probably not going to happen, and certainly I don't wish that happens. But the way, you know, like to go back to the original point, this whole fight, I just don't see how it can possibly live up to the original.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the whole danger with this one, I think. And to move on with the question, the next question he had was, why are they holding in the LA Coliseum? That is the question that I don't think has a satisfactory answer.
No,
the LA Coliseum. It holds about 90,000 people.
Yeah, historically, and again, I may be speaking from inexperience here. Historically, it seems like when I watch Japanese promotions, that they seem to take place in these monster arenas. That's like 50 or 60,000, like the Saitama Super Arena and that sort of thing. And I'm wondering if that's just translating over here.
Yeah, I think that's probably part of it for sure. And they also, I know, wanted to capitalize on the big Korean population out in L.A., you know, with Hongman Choi being the big draw. Obviously, I don't see Minsoo Kim being quite the draw that Choi would be. But obviously, they're not even promoting that he's off the card. So who knows?
Well, and again, that could be part of it too.
Yeah.
But
So that's it for the LA Coliseum. Why are they having such a hard time getting fighters cleared for the show? I think a lot of it, you know, any show can have a hard time getting fighters cleared. I think the problem is they announced pretty much everything before they tried to get anybody cleared in the States, and they're doing everything kind of last minute. So I think that's that's really what the problem is as far as why it looks bad. You know, it probably looks worse than it is, and it has looked worse than it actually was. But the behind the scenes stuff that should have been taken care of a long time ago didn't get taken care of, and I think that's why they're having a lot of problems they were having.
No, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. So, Joe, I hope that answers your questions for about K-1. Let's kind of move on from there. Actually, well, let's look at the rest of the card a little bit here. Some things to watch on here. You've got Mighty Mo, who is a big star in the K-1 rules kickboxing. He's 2-0 in MMA. He'll be fighting Ruben Warpath Villarreal, who is the perpetual last-minute substitute. Mighty Mo was not scheduled to fight Warpath originally. I can't remember who his original opponent was.
He was fighting Mube Choi.
Yeah, you're right. But he couldn't get cleared, and Villarreal is taking over. So I think we'll see a quick knockout there. Melvin Manhoff, if you haven't seen Melvin Manhoff yet, you got to find some old footage of him or, some of the cage rage stuff that he's done. This guy has dynamite in his fist. I mean, he's a very big striker.
Big banger.
He's going to be fighting Dong Sik Yoon, who has yet to win an MMA bout. Probably most well-known for having lost to Rampage Jackson not too long ago via decision. And you've also got the MMA debut of Johnny Morton, former Kansas City Chiefs receiver who did the worm when he did the touchdowns, which should be interesting.
You know, this card has a lot of fights that are, like I said, the intriguing is the word. Intriguing really is the word. I mean, they've really gone out and put names on the card. It'll be interesting to see how the names produce.
Yeah, that's for sure. It is an interesting card. I got to say that. I don't know that I want to pay $40 to see it. but it's interesting. You know? It's one of those things where I might wait for the review and then see, you know, what everybody says about it and kind of check it out. But, you know, or maybe, you know, if it provides good discussion points for next week's show, then maybe we'll check that out too.
Maybe.
And like you said, we've also got Jake Shields on the card on the Showtime portion, and also Nam Phan, who is a local favorite out there,
yep.
Will be on the Showtime card.
See, watching Jake Fields fight would be, to me, kind of worth getting the Showtime for one night and playing the pro-rated portion. You know, Shields, I think, has a bright future.
I agree.
Lots
I agree. Really, really tools. Good welterweight.
All the tools.
Yep.
In a tough division.
Yep. Very, very good welterweight, very good submission guy.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so that's your K-1 card in a nutshell. Should be interesting. Let's move on to the Ultimate Fighter. Had the new episode last night. What did you think of last night's show?
I thought it was pretty entertaining. I have to preface all this by saying I'm not really a reality TV fan. And that seems like what the season has turned into. It's turned into reality TV as opposed to let's take these fighters and give them an opportunity to perform at the highest level.
Yeah.
So I guess I'm not really losing interest in it per se, but it's just, you know, it's kind of hard to watch sometimes.
I mean, like the whole thing with Nate Diaz and Cole Miller.
I thought that was funny. I mean, I thought it was funny.
Yeah.
But it wasn't worth 45 minutes of my time.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you know what I mean? I thought the more serious point is, I do not for the life of me understand how they get these fighters in there who continually whine and complain about what their coaches want them to do. I mean, you can say whatever you want about Jens Pulver or BJ Penn in terms of their career and their status in the sport now, or, you know, Jens Pulver is a former champion. I mean, you can, you know, I'm period. You know, I would think that if you're one of the 16 guys got chosen to that show, regardless of what team you were on, that when Jen said jump, you'd say how high, because he made it.
Yeah.
You know, he was a champion. And, you know, and he has made the big stage. And for some of these guys to come in and just pull some of the stunts they're pulling, I'm not sure if – see, that's what bothers me. I'm not sure if that's really what these guys are or
right.
if that's how it's being played out and edited on TV.
Right.
It just – you know, I mean, first we had Andy Wang's soliloquy about how he and BJ Penn were Hawaiians, and how could he possibly go over to Pulver's team? And I was just watching it, you know, I was looking at my beer thinking, you know, when did I switch the days of our lives? You know, and
I think Dana White was thinking the same thing.
Yeah, and then it started again last night. He's like, well, you know, I'm here for me, and I want to get training with both guys. And I'm thinking to myself, man, you're still in the fights. I mean, you got a legitimate chance to beat a guy and move on. I would think it baffles me. I just don't get it. And I'm not sure if it's because they bring in guys who've had 10, 12, 14 fights already, because those seem to be the guys that are giving the coaches the most hassle.
Yeah, I mean, I got to think that there's people that tried out for the show that didn't make it that are thinking, I cannot believe what I'm seeing right now.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, if you're somebody out there that trains or, you know, holds down a job to train part-time and get your chances in a couple indie promotions that you get to fight and make a little cash out of it, and you watch this show, I would think they would give, you know, their left arm to be on this show and train in Las Vegas with either BJ Penn or Jens Pulver and their team.
Yeah, although they're telling you their left arm to fight, but whatever.
Well, but, you know, I mean, well, you know what I'm saying.
I know what you're
rhetorical here, but it baffles me. I mean, I just don't understand it. If there's anybody out there that is amateur or professional MMA fighter that, you know, has a comment on this, I invite you to come to the Torch Forum and post, because I would really like to hear from somebody that does this, trains and puts their time out there, and is someone like Alan Berube, for example, who got on the show and now has all this name recognition. And who will probably never be a great fighter, but is going to fight, apparently, on a UFC card, you know, once the show is over. And, you know, it stuns me. So if there's anybody out there that does this and wants to educate me, I am more than willing to listen.
Yeah, absolutely. Any amateur fighters or any professional fighters that are that have a take on this, for sure, come to the forums or, you know, drop us an email. We'd like to hear about it. So we had the drama in the beginning. I've thought about this a little bit recently. I wonder. I don't think the format is tired just yet, but I think it's in danger of getting there.
It's sleepy.
I think they would do well to kind of shake things up, maybe after the two mats go at it.
I think they would be well served to change things up, because right now we've just spent about 5 or 8 minutes talking about the drama and not the fight, which actually was a very entertaining fight.
It was. I thought it was the best fight of the season so far.
Yeah, I thought it was a very entertaining fight. I thought Brandon gave Gray a real hard time.
Yeah, I was surprised.
I was surprised by that, truthfully.
Yeah.
In fact, it almost takes down Gray a little bit, because I thought Gray was going to roll right over him.
Yeah.
But he had dominant position over and over and over and over again, and Brandon did not let him finish. Hit him a few times pretty well.
Yeah.
And just finally got caught at the end when I think Melendez gassed, and he got caught. But
yeah,
I thought
he had good submission defense throughout, though.
I mean, he gave up his back to Gray repeatedly.
Yeah.
Almost with no fear.
Yeah.
very calm, you know, hand fighting, keeping himself out of those, you know, trouble, and then he would, you know, reverse and get out. I thought Brandon fought a great fight.
Yeah, you know, the great thing about this fight was, you know, with the pace that they kept up for both rounds was phenomenal.
Right.
And it looked like two guys that are fighting for something.
Right.
You know, it didn't look like two guys that are going out there, one of them being tentative, one of them is, you know, nervous. It's two guys throwing it down in order to make it to the next round.
Right.
I agree. And that's, you know, that's what we want to see. Is people that want this, you know,
right.
And it was kind of refreshing, actually.
Right, well, that's what Joe and Dana want to see.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, that's what they want to see.
So I think all in all, it was a solid episode, especially with the good fight at the end. And we actually got almost the full fight and with the definitive ending, so it was kind of nice.
It was very nice. Like I said, I agree with you. The, you know, best fight of the season, in my opinion, certainly.
Yeah,
and I thought the Diaz Miller thing was funny.
Yeah, it was funny. It was funny, but it could get old after a while.
Yeah.
But yeah, I got to say though, if there's one guy I would just kind of leave alone on the show, it'd probably be Nate Diaz.
Yeah.
You know,
I mean,
but if Diaz was waking me up, I'd be like, all right, you know what, you got me. Okay, I'm just gonna.
Truce.
Yeah. Because Diaz is one of those guys that's not going to let it go until it's over and he's won,
right.
You know, by two or three.
That's true. That's true.
Yeah. So it's a good ending with them soaking him and throwing flour on him. I thought that was good.
That's good. I thought they did a good job of pimping next week's episode with two more fights and Caro showing up.
Yes.
I will say this. Now I think about it, though. I will say this. It was interesting how they juxtaposed Melendez, you know, not really listening to Pulver, not really paying attention to Jen's team, with Randy Couture coming in to BJ's team, and everybody just sitting in rapt attention.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Everybody, it was like you would have thought that someone's, you know, that it was a religious leader that just walked in.
Yeah, it's like the Pope just strode through the doors and everybody got on their knees. I mean, now granted, you know, heavyweight champion, legend, class act, of course, you know, of course you give them your attention, but I'm surprised that it takes that level of guy, because there are very few. There's only one Randy Couture.
Yeah, that's for
sure. You know, in terms of well-respected guys of his level, there are very, very, very few. And if that's what it takes to get guys' attention, that is a sad commentary on the guys they're bringing in.
Yeah. Well, let's move on with stay with the Ultimate Fighter for a little bit. It was announced this week that on the finale. We've got Marlon Sims versus Noah Thomas in the Street Fight rematch.
Oh,
what do you think about this?
This has been a pretty hot topic up on the old MMA Torch forum. I am not as indignant about this as most are. In fact, I think if you couldn't see this coming, you need to take your blinders off. you know, I think that Dana realizes that when... with the type of fighters he's bringing in, that this was going to happen eventually, and it did.
Yeah.
And I am sure that when it happened, and it's all on tape, that, you know, they were going to shill it as a rematch at Ultimate Fight Night. I mean,
yeah.
I don't think there's any question about it. I mean, there are people that watch the episode, know the fighters, know the backstory, and now they're going to see him fight.
Yeah.
I mean, if this is
yeah, I agree.
If this isn't right out of the WWE playbook, I don't know what it is. I mean, seriously.
Yeah. Well, yeah. You know, say what you will, but the promotion model is solid. It's proved to be solid.
I mean, is it right or wrong? That's debatable.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, they got punished by getting thrown off the show, and they lost their shot at, you know, being marquee guys for now.
Yep.
But
at the same time, I think it does reward them, at least in the short run. You know, I don't know how this fight will turn out or whether it'll be, you know, a snooze fest or what have you.
It does reward them for
name recognition, that there's people talking about them.
Right. It rewards them in the sense also, though, that the UFC benefits from it.
Yeah.
I mean, yes, there's bad publicity, but, you know, you'll tune in to watch that fight.
Yeah.
You know, you'll watch
and
that
you know,
fight.
Yeah, you know, I don't think the fight on the show would have been as bad if Sims hadn't dropped Noah on his head like he did on the concrete. Yeah, I thought that was a little bit much.
That was scary.
Yeah, it was. It really was. You know, it's one thing to do it in the octagon, but to do it, you know, on the concrete, that was pretty rough. I agree with you that, you know, it was inevitable. You know, it was going to happen. I mean, they said it themselves, you know, so you had the finale because they knew it was going to happen. And I do agree that their punishment was getting kicked off the show because at that point, you know, they can't train anymore with these guys, and it kind of takes that opportunity away from them.
And that's the penalty. I mean, the penalty is you don't get to train with these world-class athletes and their staff.
Yep.
Which, I mean, I don't know what the price is on that. I mean, I don't know how much... Like I said, I don't seek out fight camps, so I don't know what it takes to get into Jeff Oliver's camp or fight with American Top Team or Team Quest or Greg Jackson's camp. I would imagine that you have to have credentials and backing.
Yeah.
So here's your opportunity. You just gave it away. Now, this is different than Gabe Rudiger getting kicked off the show.
Yeah. That was the next thing I wanted to talk about was Rudiger.
Which to me is a completely different animal.
For sure.
These guys fought because I think it's well documented that there's a lot of tedium in the house and...
Yeah, and drinking.
You know, mixing a little alcohol and things get out of hand.
Yeah.
And, you know, go to your corner, you're off the show. But, you know, it's not the same thing as you were overweight, didn't make weight, couldn't make weight, and it's disrespect about the sport in general.
Yep.
And that is, and then Gabe's trials continue, apparently.
Yeah.
I hate to laugh.
For those that haven't heard,
nice guy, and I don't want to laugh, but it's like, you know.
Yeah, it's an interesting development on GracieFighter.com. They're reporting now. As a little background, Rudiger was released from his UFC contract so that he could pursue fighting elsewhere. He was tentatively scheduled to be on the K1 show this weekend, but the California State Athletic Commissioner Armando Garcia had seen Rudiger on the Ultimate Fighter and determined that he was mentally unfit to fight. So he's going to have to go.
Because of a reality TV show. I mean, let's put this in perspective. Now, wait a minute. Let's put this in perspective. All right, so we have Gabe Rudiger, who is deemed mentally unfit to fight based on an edited reality TV show.
Yeah.
Okay. But yet, we're going to take Sakuraba, who had a documented single event with a history of multiple traumatic head injuries, and he's clear to fight.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you've
explain that.
I can't. I can't.
Right.
You know, it's another, you know, boner by the athletic commissions, you know.
Holy moly. I mean, I'm not the brightest doc in the book, and I freely admit that. You know, but I mean, I don't know how you explain that. As a licensed physician, I'd love to know, you know, exactly how does one rate over the other?
Yeah.
How do you make?
You know, it's.
I can't get my mind around it.
Yeah. I mean, to me, you've got this, and then with the Nevada Athletic Commission, you've got the Nick Diaz marijuana fight overturning.
Oh.
You know, I understand the suspension. Overturning the fight, I thought was too much, but that's a dead horse. But I, you know, I just think it's two goofy decisions by athletic commissions.
Because I mean, if the argument goes, well, Sakuraba's facing a ground guy and he's not going to get hit. Well,
yeah.
I mean, so who are they going to put Gabe in there against? You know, if they put Gabe in the ring or the cage, you know, they got to make sure that the guy they put him against isn't going to tease him. Call them names. I mean, what exactly? You know, I don't understand. I just don't get it. It's I don't get it.
Yeah.
So, you know, on the one hand, I feel kind of bad for Gabe.
Yeah.
Because I think we were talking a little earlier, 3 months ago or prior to the beginning of The Ultimate Fighter, I think most people figured Gabe was one of the guys to beat, certainly one of the contenders. And now, you can almost make the argument he's a laughingstock.
Yeah.
He's a head case.
Well,
I mean,
you know, it'd be one thing if he just stayed in the UFC and was able to fight on the finale and probably win a fight. It's another thing now that he's been, you know, that he was released, tried to go to K-1 and got declared mentally unfit.
Yeah.
You know, I can't say it without laughing.
I mean, who has that happened to? I mean, you know, do you have to be, like, psychotic to not get, you know, clearance to fight? I mean, there's some guys that are mentally unbalanced that get in that cage.
Yeah.
I think you got to be a little mentally unbalanced anyway, but still, I mean, to me, that's the news item of the week here, is a fighter is mentally unfit to participate in mixed martial arts. I mean...
Because of a reality show.
Yeah, because of a reality show. I mean, that's just too bizarre. I mean, that is
too
bizarre.
I agree.
Ah.
So, anyway, let's move on from The Ultimate Fighter. We talked a little bit about UFC 71 being the big, you know, pretty much the biggest mixed martial art event in the States, probably up to this point, and we had ESPN covering it. What do you think about ESPN's coverage of the whole thing, you know, pre and post event?
I thought it was F-. You know, I would grade them a Z if I could.
Yeah.
It was awful. And it was awful because nobody watched the fight. It was obvious.
Yeah.
Nobody watched the fight or the cards.
Yeah.
And, I mean, Monday or Tuesday, I watched Around the Horn and Pardon the Interruption and, you know, the ESPN line of programming.
Yeah.
And they brought it up, and it was a topic. And it was a topic. And almost unanimously, it was obvious to me that these pundits, who, granted, have to know a lot about the world of sports, not just mixed martial arts, but a lot about the world of sports, had not seen any of the card, and were still commenting on what they thought of it.
Yeah.
How can you comment on something that you didn't see? And I think one of the commentators, I think Jay Mariotti comes to mind, who confirmed that he is a complete ass, came out and said, oh, you know, $35-40 for a 2-minute fight, that's not Ultimate Fighting, and blah, 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 blah. It was, you know, when you buy a card, you buy a card of fights.
Yeah.
That's the whole point. You know, yes, there's the main event which hooks you into the buy, but the point of, or actually, I shouldn't say the point, but the benefit of mixed martial arts is when you buy that card of fights and you have 6 fights, the odds of you seeing at least 2 good fights are almost 100%.
Yeah.
At least 2 good fights. The reality is you're going to see probably more than that. You're going to see probably 4 or 5 good fights, but it has been a long time since I bought a card and saw a bunch of dog fights in a row.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, UFC 50, I think UFC 55 was the last card that was pretty much a dud.
A long time. And, you know, if we go back to boxing, because obviously we can't get, you know, that off the map anytime soon.
Yeah.
The De La Hoya-Mayweather fight, if Mayweather had knocked out De La Hoya or vice versa in the second round, nobody would be talking about it.
Yeah, everybody'd be going
nuts. Nobody would be talking about, you know, $50-$60 for a minute and a half fight. Nobody would be talking about that. I'll tell you right now, there was more aggression shown in that 2 minutes of Liddell Jackson than the entire 12-round dance that was De La Hoya-Mayweather.
That was a sparring match, really.
It was a sparring match.
Yeah.
And I was grossly disappointed with the coverage and the commentation. If you didn't see it and if you don't know about it, say, I don't know. Come out.
Yeah.
Dance around a little bit for 30 seconds and get off camera.
Yeah, or say, you know, all I saw was the main event, because if that's all you saw, then that's all you can really comment on. You can't really say, I paid $40 for 2 minutes because it's ludicrous.
Right, because
that's
not what you did. I mean, at least Tony Kornheiser came out and you know, used all the old terms, which I'm not going to repeat here, but admits that that's not his thing. He said he's too old.
Yeah.
And he came out and said it. And I give Tony credit for at least being honest.
Exactly.
Honest. I mean, honest.
And Wilbon, even Wilbon said, you know, he saw the card, but he didn't talk very much on it because, you know, I don't think he felt real qualified to talk a whole lot on it.
And I can't blame Wilbon for doing that. But, you know, if you're a consumer, and again, when we get down to this particular brand of sport, any brand of sport, really, it's entertainment value. What was the entertainment value to you, Mike, as a consumer? Not as a journalist, because as a journalist, you're right, you're not qualified to comment on the technical aspects of what you saw.
Yeah.
But did you enjoy the fights? What did you think? Was it exciting? Would you watch another one? That's kind of what, because you're a national figurehead on television.
Yeah.
You know, your partner is, by his own definition, an old man who is interested, who wants to go back to 1941 and watch baseball again, which is fine.
Right.
No, which is fine. There is no, then that's fine. But he doesn't feel comfortable talking about it at all and can't get past his old man bias.
Yeah.
Because
at least he admits it.
And he admits it. And, again, that's the beauty of Tony Kornheiser, is he's honest about it, as opposed to some goof like the Around the Horn staff who had no clue and really have no excuse. Because I think on that show, either on that show or, pardon the interruption, I can't remember, they mentioned the ESPN poll, which event this weekend are you looking the most forward to? And the UFC card was like 85%.
Yeah.
As opposed to the NASCAR race and the NBA basketball and... I mean, it was overwhelmingly positive.
Yeah, I think the final count was like UFC went up. It was like 35, but that was still the highest.
Right.
It
was a fun number, and I was like,
I think the thing that bothered me even more than those shows was the SportsCenter coverage. I mean, yeah, they covered it, but the anchors obviously didn't know anything about the sport, which is fine. But, you know, every time they talk about hockey, who do they bring in? Barry Melrose. You know?
Yep.
But you're telling me they can't find anybody that knows something about mixed martial arts that can comment intelligently on the sport?
Yeah, I mean, they're not.
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah, they can tell you what this card means and, you know, whether it really is a disaster that Rampage knocked out the superstar in 2 seconds.
Right.
You know, is it? You're telling me they can't find anyone to comment on this?
No, apparently not. they're not even writing their own columns about it. I mean, they're piggybacking Sherdog. I mean, if you go to the ESPN site and end up on an MMA link, you know, it's one or two of the guys from Sherdog that are writing the columns. It's not an ESPN column.
Yeah, even if you link, you know, if you click on a link on the ESPN page, it takes you to Sherdog.
Which makes me think, you know, I mean, there's a few sites that do podcasts. There's us and there's Sherdog show and MMA Weekly show, and I would think that you would contact, I mean, to me, you know, like it or not, you know, Sherdog is the established leader in the clubhouse.
Sure.
I mean, and, you know, and there's no rancor there.
But why not?
Call one of these guys or say, hey, we'd like you to do 90 seconds on the pay-per-view card.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, why not call up Josh Gross or Jeff Sherwood and say, you know, bring him on the show. Bring him, you know, if you don't want to put him on TV, put him on the phone.
Put them on
the phone. Do something.
Right.
Get someone on there that can comment intelligently on the sport who's not a fighter and who's not an employee of the UFC.
Right. I mean, they have experts for, like, the X Games.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, for you know, the snowcross, they'll bring somebody in to talk about the snowcross. I mean, we got into this last week with Wade, and I don't know who that guy is or girl is or who that should be, but it should be somebody because the sport is getting too big to not have that person that ESPN goes to for analysis. And there's only so many fighters to cover right now that are really in the mainstream.
Yeah.
You know, every time you see boxing, who do you see? Bert Sugar.
Yep.
Bert Sugar and, what's his name? Max Kellerman.
Kellerman, yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, that's who you see. MMA needs that guy.
Yep.
Or ESPN needs that guy because right now ESPN is losing credibility.
Yeah, at least among MMA fans, you know,
which are growing.
Yeah, I mean, anybody that's seen the 4 or 5 cards and saw the coverage of that event knows that it was bogus.
Oh, it was awful. It was awful. I mean, you could look at the niche sports, like the winter sports in particular, are niche anyway. But if you go into the winter sports that make up the X Games, as they say, which is really, it's that's about as niche as you can get right now.
Yeah.
It's blown up because ESPN realized that there was a market there that was untapped.
Yeah.
And then their coverage jumped. Then they began to work the coverage. Right now they have the same situation where you have this market that, for the most part, in the mainstream is untapped or uncovered, you know, outside of the cable networks and whatnot, you know, the minor cable networks. This is their opportunity, if they choose to accept it, to integrate themselves into it and establish that market for their own benefit.
Yeah. I mean, you can argue you can argue that any sport pretty much has a niche following. The question always is there money in, you know, exploiting that niche? And you can't tell me there's no money in exploiting a niche that pays $40 a month for pay-per-views.
You can't tell me there's no money in exploiting a niche that pays $550 to sit somewhere near the ring.
You know?
You know, at a pay-per-view, or $450 or $500. It costs $100 to get in the door.
Yeah.
I mean, clearly, somebody's watching this. Somebody's paying money for it. I mean, we're not talking about $5 at the door with popcorn for the local VFW.
Yeah, exactly.
Somebody's watching it. And like I said, I can't believe there's not an intern at ESPN that...
Just kidding.
That one of the brass would say, who are the lead commentators in the world of MMA right now? You know, the internet journalists.
Yeah.
You could find them in a matter of 3 minutes. It's, you know, I mean...
And get Stephen Quadros on there.
Sure. Sure. Get Stephen, why not? Yeah. I mean, the name, you know, we could probably come up with 10, 15 names right now. Even if you want somebody older, even if you want to get somebody that was younger and less in the establishment, like I said, like you said, you get the guy, you know, guy's a sure dog.
Yeah.
You know, I hate to say we're beating a dead horse. This summer will be interesting to see what happens on that front. And I don't think I don't think it really matters whether they do their coverage or not, truthfully.
Yeah.
I think that there's enough media outlets right now that the sport will continue to grow despite ESPN or without ESPN.
Yeah. If you're frustrated with ESPN's coverage, just come to MMA Torch and we'll take care of you.
And we'll take care of you. That's right. Daddy's here, baby.
Yeah. So moving on from ESPN, we've got the IFL. The IFL is making a couple of headlines this week. Their stock, if you remember, around when they did the 60 Minutes story in January, was right before they went public. Then they went public and got to, or I guess it was right after they went public, but it got up to about $17 a share. It's huge, huge money.
Yep.
And this week was the first time that, and I, you know, I'm not a financial guy, so I'm going to say this as accurately as I can, but it was the first time that the initial stockholders were allowed to sell their shares. Now, the stock had fallen before this, but it got down this week to about 85 cents a share after being as high as $17. Now, I got to think, you know, they knew the drop was coming, but even before this, you know, it was only around a couple of bucks a share.
Right.
So what do you make of how this has gone down for the IFL, you know, as far as from January up until now?
Yeah. I think it's hard to say from an outside perspective specifically. It would seem on the outside looking in that that they've kind of dropped the ball somewhere. And I say this from the outside looking in, again, as a consumer. And, you know, trying to follow the IFL, if you don't have on-demand, is difficult. At least I found it to be difficult. I mean, occasionally I will find the IFL almost accidentally on one of my alternative sports networks or something that I just happen to have that night. And I think the IFL puts on a real good product. I think there's some really good fighters in there. The way it's set up, I think, is new, and it's fun to watch.
Yeah.
But it's hard to find for me.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure if other people have that same issue or not. But I think, number one, I think one of the reasons you're seeing that number go down is because accessibility is hard.
Yeah, I agree. You know, I talked about this in a column a couple of weeks ago with the Battleground thing. You know, I don't get Fox Sportsnet. And even if I did, you know, it's a regional network and they've got rotating time slots. Things get bumped around. But they've got a two-hour time slot on my network TV every week. You know, granted, it doesn't pull in huge ratings. It's about a 0.7 right now. But, I mean, I'm a guy, I've followed mixed martial arts since UFC 1 in 1993. Right. Or, you know, I can't remember exactly the year. I think it was 93. Anyway, if you can't make me understand how the NFL works with a two-hour time slot every week, and I've watched the shows, you know, there's something going on there. And I follow the NFL, too. I follow the NFL my whole life. I understand the team concept and a playoff system.
Right.
And I understand mixed martial arts. Now, if you can't tell me every week with a two-hour time slot what is going on in your season, when these things are happening, what's your playoff structure, you know, what does anything mean that you're showing me? If you can't tell me that, then there's issues.
Right.
You know?
Right. I think that's another big issue, is that it's hard to understand that, too.
Yeah. So, you know, I think that's the big problem, is just this accessibility. You know, like you say, you got to look at it from a consumer point of view. I don't know what it's like in the markets where their teams are, but I, you know, and I know they're selling out live events. There's something to be said for that, but you know, I don't know. It's frustrating. It's frustrating for consumers who want to follow it, you know,
and they can't.
Yeah, you know, I could get on the IFL website and you know, check up on it every time they have an event or whatever. But what good does that do me? You know, I can't see the fights.
Right.
You know, so I either get the fights without the meaning or the meaning without the fights.
Right. No, well, and there's your reason why, you know, the shares have plummeted. I mean, to the casual fan, name 5 to 10 IFL fighters.
Yeah.
Can't do it. I mean, you know, I mean, you can name the coaches, maybe.
Yeah.
But it's almost like the coaches have more notoriety than not only the fighters they are coaching, but the team cities they're supposed to represent.
Yep. I agree. You know, that's not necessarily an awful thing, but at the same time, you know.
It's a hard enough concept to start with originally, because, again, when you look at combat sports, it's always been, you know, one fighter against one fighter.
Yeah.
You know, the whole team concept in combat sports is a bit of a nebulous one. So to bring it onto into the mainstream requires a clear, concise, and most of all, well-broadcast point of view. And right now, they're not doing that. On any level.
Yeah. And, they, you know, they are doing a couple of things nicely. I mean, they've got Boss Rudin, and Rudin is, you know, a charismatic guy. He's great to have, you know, it's great to have him associated with your product.
Mm-hmm.
But he doesn't do anything on the show.
Well, and again,
you know?
And if you don't see it, what better would they got? They could have Mickey Mouse, and it doesn't matter.
Yeah, yeah. You know, and if you're watching Battleground, you've got Boss Rudin, and you got Tiffany Fallon. Tiffany Fallon being, you know, I don't know, she's someone, I guess. But you've got Boss Rudin on there, and they come on at least once or twice a show saying, you know, this is great to watch, but don't fight on the street, pretty much. And that's pretty much all they do as hosts of the show.
Right.
You know, if I would say if you get like a 5-10 minute segment at the beginning and end of the show with Boss Rudin breaking down what's happened before, what you're about to see, And then you show the show, then Rudin comes on again and says what this all means. To me, it's a no-brainer, you know. I mean, you got Boss Rudin, who's a charismatic guy who people like, especially hardcore MMA fans, who are pretty much, you know, it's probably most of the IFL's audience is hardcore MMA fans.
Yep. I would think that's exclusively who it is right now.
Yeah.
Because nobody else is seeing it.
Yeah, and they can't use Rudin to market their product. I mean, I don't know. It's concerning to me that they don't get that.
Yeah, it's bizarre.
Yeah.
Like I said, it's odd. I wouldn't say it's odd. It's a credit, I guess, you know, to the UFC, whether you love them or hate them, that their product is out there.
Yeah.
And it's so easily acceptable, and really, when you look at the bare facts of the matter, that you have these other organizations that realistically have the same product or a very similar product with mostly similar fighters.
Yeah.
Okay, I mean, when you get down to it, after you get past the top, you know, 7 or 8, you know, you have fighters here that can, the rest of the fighters have clearly shown that they can jump into those ranks.
Yeah.
The difference is in promotion.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, the difference is in promotion and, you know, exporting your product to the masses.
Yeah.
I mean, especially when you look at like the top 10 rank, like our top 10 rankings. You know, we rank all the, you know, we rank fighters on the torch in each weight class, top 10 fighters. You know, the reason why most of those fighters on that list is because at least we see them fight.
Yeah,
You know, I mean, Keith Jardine was way up the list in light heavy, and he just got owned.
Yeah.
By a guy that realistically might, you know, if they fought again, might own him again.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, certainly no reason why he couldn't. Gabriel Gonzaga was nowhere on the list when he fought Krokop. And now, I think the most telling thing I saw from the Ultimate Fighter show last night was the Amped Mobile poll.
Yeah.
Which had 52% picking Gonzaga over Couture right after Couture was on the show.
Yeah, that was pretty surprising.
That was shocking to me. I figured it would have been 85-15, which tells
you... I thought the same thing.
Which tells you a lot of people saw Gonzaga knock out Krokop.
Yeah.
That's what it told me, that a lot of people watching this show either know their MMA or saw Gonzaga knock out Krokop.
Yeah.
And watched that whole aftermath.
Yep.
So I guess, like I say, the bottom line is these minor league promotions need to find a way to break into the marketplace.
Yeah. Yeah, it's one thing, you know, if you're a smaller promotion without a TV deal, it's one thing to go do your live events. That's fine, you know. You don't have to have a storyline associated with all your stuff because you're marketing the sport. You're not marketing fighters,
right.
You know. But if you've got a TV deal, you've got to know how to use it.
Exactly.
You know, and I think that's the big thing with IFL. They've got two TV deals and can't figure out what to do with them.
It almost feels like I said, I've seen maybe one or two IFL broadcasts, and it struck me as they're trying to use the TV to sell out their live shows.
Yeah.
And I thought that was backwards.
Yeah.
You know, you should be using your live shows to bust open your TV deal.
Yeah.
You know, that's the way, and again, that's just the way I interpreted it, but it just seemed backwards.
Yeah.
But when you get down to it, that gives you a stock that's worth about 85 cents.
Yeah.
You know.
Get that the bottom line.
Almost a cheeseburger at a fast food joint.
Yeah.
Fast food joint.
No kidding.
You can have a share of IFL or you can have a cheeseburger.
All right, let's move on. Let's move back to the UFC a little bit. There was a report on MMA News from Mike Swick, an interview with Mike Swick, who confirmed he's moving down to 170 to the welterweight class. What do you think about that move for Swick?
I think that's a good move for Swick. I think it plays into his tools a little better to go down in weight. I think the loss to Okami was, opened his eyes to what it takes to get to the upper level of of the other division there, but I think it's a good move for Swick, and I think you know he's got the tools to compete in that division a lot better. Having said that, I didn't think he was that bad before.
Yeah, I agree. You know, you could hear him between the first and second rounds of the Okami fight saying he's too big, he's too strong.
Yep.
But then he goes out there and if he strikes with him, he's winning the fight. You know?
Right. And so I think it's kind of there's two ways to look at it. Either it's a premature move after, you know, losing to, at this point, a better opponent, or it's a really wise move to get yourself out of the division before you lose too many fights.
Yeah, it's probably a good move in the long run because if you look at it, you know, obviously Swick's a striker. There's no way he's getting up there and striking with Rich Franklin.
No.
You know,
But again, you're looking at Rich Franklin, who right now is top three in division.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But, you know,
that's he can't get there.
Where Swick wants to be. Now, if you move down to 170, he's probably, and, you know, I haven't looked at the stats, he's probably around the same size as a George St. Pierre.
Yep.
You know, maybe a little bit smaller than that, I don't know. But he's certainly down there with guys that are his own size.
Right.
You know, he's bigger than they are.
And that'll help him. You know, he's quick. He's certainly got good submission skills. He can strike well for a guy like that. He strikes very well.
Yeah.
And I think he fits into that mix pretty well, assuming he can get a couple fights and a couple wins.
Yeah. So it'll be interesting for Swick. I think it'll be. I'd like to see him fight next time. I think he said his next fight's coming up in September, but he doesn't know who he's fighting. So I think that's for what it's worth. In other middleweight news. UFCJunkie.com is reporting that Paulo Filho is looking to sign with the WEC. What's your take on that one?
It'll be good to see Filho get, into the mainstream here for casual fans to take a look at him. Outstanding fighter. Even with limited exposure, he's in most people's top tens. Rumor had it that he was on the short list to fight Franklin, but got bumped by Okami, I suspect due to name recognition among the casual fan.
Yeah.
More than not. I think Filo will be a good addition to WEC to kind of pump that brand up, as
yep.
well as bolster his resume to make a run at the title.
Yeah, I agree. You know, at this, yeah.
Very exciting.
Yeah, I agree. At this point, I think we can, I mean, you know, it's hard to say for sure, but I think we can pretty much decide that Pride is not going to be what it used to be.
No.
You know, they're bringing all the guys, they're bringing all the top guys out of Pride over into the UFC or WEC. I think their best move is to bring those guys that don't have big name recognition, Dennis Kang, Palofilio, you know, those guys, bring them into the WEC and build up the WEC, because regardless, you know, I don't care what Dana White says, the WEC is a feeder league for the UFC.
Yep.
I mean, there's no way it's not.
Yeah, and I mean, there's no shame in admitting that either.
Yeah, so, exactly.
Every major league has minor leagues.
Yeah, I think it's a great idea to do it. You know, use your lighter weights. You've got your bantam weight and your feather weights there that you don't have in the UFC. So that's something that, you know, that's something they can hang their hat on. And it's a feeder league for the UFC, so it's tomorrow's stars in the WEC. I think it's a great idea.
Yeah.
You know, that having been said, bring those guys in from Pride that are going to tear through the competition. You know, get some name recognition in the WEC, and then you've got automatic draws in the UFC.
Yep. Oh,
no. I think it's a real good idea.
I think Pride, as we've known it, is definitely done.
Yeah.
Dana
looking that way.
Said that we're going to have them all.
Yeah, he had said that.
There is no suggestion that they're not. Pride, I mean, you might even see Pride become, you know, a feeder league from the East.
Yeah, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if they just, you know, if they just keep Pride going, you know, maybe keep those freak show fights going,
mm-hmm.
give the Japanese guys, big guys to fight, you know, I don't know. How it'll work, you know, I would imagine they're going to leave guys like Ikuhisa Minowa, you know, over in Pride. You know, I can't see him picking up guys like that, or Yoshida, you know, guys like that.
I think
so.
The question will be if what they do with kind of the lightweights and the you know the catchweight guys that don't really
fit
a division. If you're going to see guys like Gomi come over or Sakurai,
Oh yeah, I mean, they've got to bring those guys over.
You would think they'd come over to bolster the lightweight division.
Yeah,
but
I don't know if Gomi wants to make lightweight. He may go for welterweight.
Welterweight, yeah, I'd read that too. I would think he'd be better at lightweight.
I would agree.
I would think he'd do a lot better. I think he would get owned in the welterweight division in the UFC.
Yeah,
I really do. I think lightweight is a much better draw for him.
Yeah, well, he'd be a huge lightweight too.
Again, much better draw for him.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
he'd be huge for lightweight, but he wouldn't be as big as a lot of the welterweight guys who really work the ground. I mean, can you imagine him in there with any of the top three or four?
Well, St. Pierre, sure.
St. Pierre.
I mean, look at him against Nick Diaz. Nick Diaz is a great fighter. Carol Parise, gosh.
I mean, there's your top five welterweights right now in the UFC, and I wouldn't take Gomi against any of them.
Yeah.
I think Sarah would take him. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, especially, you know, the confidence he's got by beating St. Pierre and his jiu-jitsu, I think the ground game just comes into play so much more that I think Gomi would have a hard time with him.
Yeah. Well, certainly possible. I'm interested to see what's going to happen over the next few months with all these Pride guys. It'll be an intriguing time for sure.
Oh, it'll be a fun summer. But I think the handwriting is on the wall. They're coming to the UFC.
Yeah, I agree for sure. Either they're coming to Zuffa, either way.
They're coming to Zuffa, I should say. They're coming to the UFC or WEC.
Yeah.
No question.
So speaking of WEC, you know, we've also got the Sunday night show coming up.
Yep.
It's a big, big night for the WEC. They've got a highlight show coming on before the actual live event. Live event starts at 9. If I'm not mistaken, the highlight show starts at 8. And they've already had two events under the Zuffa banner. So they'll be showing highlights from those fights. From all accounts, they've been really good shows.
Yep, that's what I've heard. This will be the first one I'm actually going to see.
Yeah, me too.
I'm anxious to see it. And again, you know, you just pointed out highlight show before the card starts. What does that do? It introduces you to the fighters. That's
yeah, promotion. I think it's brilliant. It's
promotion.
Brilliant.
Because I mean, if you're a casual fan, you're flipping through the fight card, and you got your 18 fighters here. You know, you might know three or four of them.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Alex Karalexis comes to mind.
Yeah.
Uriah Faber.
Uh-huh.
You know, Brock Larson. But a lot of the guys are, you know, you haven't seen these guys maybe or not familiar with them. They haven't had a lot of fights, you know.
Yep.
So that's, you know, running down or introducing the fighters is you know, brilliant.
Yeah,
you know?
It's the only way to go, really.
You know, and Bodog does that well, too. Not to, you know, I'll drop another Bodog quote in here.
Yeah.
Bodog does a nice job of showing you who the fighters are before they actually show the fight.
Yeah.
And it gives you an idea
yeah.
of backstory. You know,
yeah.
I tell you, I think Bodog is more of a threat to getting into the mainstream right now than anybody else.
Yeah, you know, you're probably right.
What they need is more of a goal at the end of the
yeah.
season. Because I'm watching
yeah.
the show every week, and I still don't know what happens at the end of the season. I mean, seriously, we saw these fights, and I mean, Tuesday was probably the worst two fights I had seen in the whole season, but still,
yeah.
you know, and you got all these guys fighting and women fighting, and I know that, about the only thing I know right now is that is Tara LaRose is fighting Laura D'Auguste for the women's championship in July under Bodog,
yeah.
the Bodog 135-pound women's championship. I don't know, you know, they had Eddie Alvarez pimped for next week's show. They didn't mention he's the middleweight champion.
Yeah. Well, he's the former champion now.
Huh?
He's the former champion now.
Former champion now, but, you know,
yeah.
even, you're right, apologies, but still, even so, there should be mention of that there is a championship, I guess, at
yeah.
that point. You would never know. I mean, you know, like I said, I watch the show. I mean, I review the show, and it's like,
yeah.
two more fights, but where do the fights lead? I mean, you know, when you watch a UFC card or a Pride card or what have you, the fights lead to an event. Even IFL lead to the playoffs.
Yeah.
To a championship run. Bodog just down there on the beach fighting.
Yeah.
Kind of like
yeah.
a kegger that got out of hand.
Yep.
You know? I mean, anyway, that's kind of off topic. Back to the WEC.
Yeah.
So anyway, I think this should be a really fun card to watch.
I agree. You're going to get to see the lighter weights. You've got Dry Faber on the card,
yep.
featherweight champion. You've got Mark Hominick, who we saw in the UFC beating Eve Edwards and George Rizal.
Yep.
He fought at 155 in the UFC, but he's actually a natural featherweight, so he's going to be fighting on the card. You've got Alex Karalexis, like you said. Brock Larson, who is he's a guy who could break out in the WEC and then be someone that they promote in the UFC. He was originally supposed to get a shot at Carlos Condit for the welterweight belt, but Condit was got a training injury, so I don't know if Larson's actually going to be on the main card anymore.
Boy, you would think that. I don't see why they wouldn't. I mean, the guy's 20-1.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, it'll be interesting to see what they actually show.
I was surprised he got dropped off the card. But then again, you got guys. You got John Alessio in a fight after that.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, Alessio's a guy that gave Diego Sanchez a run for his money a little while ago.
Yep.
So.
I don't know. I think it's the same thing. You got 9 fights here and. You know, they all could be real good fights.
Yeah.
I mean, Farrer and Faber should be a real good. That should be fantastic.
Yep. So, well, I think we pretty much hit on everything for the news this week. Any parting shots?
None really. I think casual fans, if you can get the IFL tonight, they have a show going. I think it's from Seattle tonight.
Yep.
You know, tomorrow night is the channel flipping sensation that is Elite XCK1, and then Sunday night you have the WEC, and then really, I guess the point is for the casual fan, if you're able to catch 2 or all 3 of these events, it'll be a good primer to how each of these promotions does business.
Yep.
Plus, it'll be an introduction to probably, you know, 30 or 40 fighters that you may not have seen before.
Yeah.
It's going to be a big summer for the sport. I mean, you got a bunch
yeah.
of UFC pay-per-views coming up. All of them look good. You got multiple title defenses.
Yeah.
You got these other promotions trying to break through. It's still a great time to be an MMA fan.
Yeah, I agree. June's going to be just a huge month.
Oh.
And it's just going to be followed up by more.
And it's just starting. I mean, you know, it's
yeah.
June is today.
Yep.
So, it's going to be a great month. It's going to run right into July and just a fantastic summer. So
yeah.
That's about all.
And lots of subplots too, storylines and things to follow up on with the Pride thing and you know, all sorts of things to hear about.
Well, if nothing else, you can find it on the Torch, but not on the
Yes, that's for sure. So come see us at MMATorch.com. You know, come to the forums. We always, I always post a thread every week about the podcast. So tell us what you want to hear. You know, I'll post a thread on Monday, or feel free to post your own thread in my zone, in the Sean Ennis zone. Or drop us an email. You can drop me an email at ennistorch@sbcglobal.net. So I think that's about it for this week. Thanks again, Jerry, for joining me.
My pleasure.
On the show.
My pleasure.
For Jerry Catalan, this is Sean Ennis. Thanks for listening, and have a great week. Play that funky music.